Okay, so hey everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Folk Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and remote work experts from all around the world. Our guest today is Nick Talreja, CEO at Sidecar. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Vid. Thank you.
Yeah, Nick, it is fantastic to have you on the show. Your journey from law to venture and now as a CEO and co-founder at Sidecar is truly inspiring. So can you maybe share with our listeners some, you know, maybe key milestones in your career that brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. If we're talking about key milestones, this goes for me way back to childhood. When I was a young kid, probably around 7 or 8, my dad had to change careers, and we didn't have a lot of money. We kind of lost everything. And as a result, he had to figure something out. He had to start a business from nothing, from scratch. And it was a real bootstrap type business, buying merchandise and selling it to a retail audience, basically. And I grew up in that business, and I saw how my dad struggled to take it from nothing to build it to something that was very strong ultimately, and basically allowed my family to get from poverty to live in a nice neighborhood. And I was instrumental in supporting my parents during that time because they didn't have anyone else to work with them. So they tagged me in as like a salesperson to pack boxes, to answer the phone, to help them build out their inventory system in Microsoft Access, which was like this database application back then. And I basically was, you know, I got to follow that entrepreneur journey as a child. And I think a lot of what I saw became a part of my core values very early on, like the sort of ownership mentality, a growth mindset, really thinking about customers deeply as partners, not just someone I wanted to sell to, but someone I wanted to build for and with and grow with. And I think that entrepreneurial spirit was set at a very early age for me. So my career didn't take me through an entrepreneurial journey right away. I did try to start a couple of businesses after college that didn't really go very far. But then I went to grad school because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I picked law because it seemed like a skill that was valuable even beyond business. I was like, oh, it's a specialized skill. I could maybe be a lawyer. If I don't want to be a lawyer, I could still go into business. And long story short, I ended up practicing law for about a decade after law school. And when I practiced law, I initially started working in New York City, working with very large clients, you know, investment banks, as they were taking their, you know, investment banks as they were representing companies that they're going public, as well as companies that were pre-IPO and taking them public. So very large companies. And I would constantly find myself gravitating to reading TechCrunch and Crunchbase and all the other, you know, publications and data sets around the startups ecosystem. And lo and behold, I started to feel more passionate about the startup ecosystem than the large clients I was serving, which maybe is you know, something I should have expected. So I ended up moving to Silicon Valley. And I worked for a law firm called Cooley, representing startups, representing VCs. That took me down an entrepreneurial journey of starting my own law firm, as I had a couple clients that wanted to work with me directly when I was at Cooley. And I ended up investing behind some of these clients that I thought were really interesting companies that were, you know, going somewhere. And I wanted to be a part of that upside, not only as you know, a lawyer charging them an hourly rate, but on their cap table as a stakeholder, someone that was behind them and supporting them with my dollars also, which ultimately led to feeling the pain of being an investor. I started to syndicate investments eventually because I had friends back in New York that wanted to invest behind these same companies I was investing in. And I was like, all right, I guess I can help you do that since I can spin up an SPV to give you some exposure to startup ecosystem. And I started to feel that pain directly of being a VC. You know, what I learned quickly was that, you know, there are standards for how companies can raise capital. You can rely on instruments like the Y Combinator Safe, which is like a 5-page agreement that everyone understands. But if you're a VC trying to start your business, there are no standards. There's no go-to instrument. There was no go-to software that everyone recognized as the gold standard. And it dawned on me that the entirety of private markets, which is this $14 trillion market of people invest behind things like real estate, VC, private equity, hedge funds, there are no standards. And it kind of, you know, made me realize, hey, what if we could build gold standards across these different asset classes? And that's when Sidecar was born. This was back in 2020. Started the company officially in 21. It's been 3 years now at Sidecar, and it's been a marathon. And yeah, a lot of like the nuggets of what I bring to Sidecar started again way back in childhood as far as my core values. And those are the core values of Sidecar today.
Yeah. And speaking about Sidecar, so Sidecar currently addresses this critical need in simplifying the back office complexities of fund management. That's from my understanding, right? Can you maybe delve deeper into this unique value proposition of Sidecar and how it has maybe evolved since you started?
Absolutely. You know, the value proposition is pretty simple. Like we take the pain out of your operation as a VC, right? So what are the things that a new VC, someone that's very passionate about backing, let's say, seed stage life science companies that may be developing therapeutics to treat, you know, patients with unique types of cancer. Like, let's say that's the person's passion and they want to invest behind these companies. What are they really good at? They're probably good at identifying those founders and validating those businesses. What do they not want to deal with? It's all this stuff that like relates to legal entity formation, banking, tax, accounting, communication with investors, ultimately supporting their investors at a liquidity event, right? Creating a secondary opportunity for their investors where they can maybe get some value out of their early investment behind you. And our goal is to take away all of the stuff you don't want to deal with and make it software driven so you can focus on what you really are passionate about, which is backing game-changing founders. And that value proposition is, again, the simple one is just like keep things simple for our customers and take the pain away. What we've iterated on since is really, I think the unique aspect of our value internally is the software-driven nature of how we do things, the standard-driven nature of how we do things. So if you're working with us, you kind of have to accept certain boundaries around how you conduct your business that enable us to be truly software-driven behind the scenes. And I'm sure you've seen some of this working with us, right? But like, we hire engineers that have a lot of talent in different, specifically around back-end infrastructure, because so much of what we do is related to creating integrations with banks directly, with different vendors for compliance purposes. We built out our own bespoke ledger system. It's all sort of behind-the-scenes magic that really keeps things simple on the front end.
And you touched this a bit, but still, could you share more about who exactly can be a part of Sidecar? Who exactly can benefit from your platform? And for those who are interested, how do they begin using it?
Yeah, it's anyone who wants to invest in a private company today. This is sort of like the customer base. Anyone who wants to invest in a private company and wants to bring other people along for the journey, right, to invest in that business.
Got it. So in light of the current venture market dynamics, what trends have you observed, especially with the correction of in valuation and increase in diligence? So how has maybe Sidecar navigated these changes?
Yeah, 2020 and 2021, post-COVID, I think we saw that there was this sort of free-flowing capital, right, for better or worse, and folks could start businesses anywhere. In fact, Sidecar benefited from this. And as a result, valuation started to skyrocket, as it seemed like every opportunity was a great opportunity. 2022 was a pretty sobering year. I think people came back to reality when they realized that maybe there was a bubble in the private markets. But we weathered that storm primarily because our value prop of keeping things simple for our customers and doing so at an attractive cost is actually almost more attractive in a sort of retraction period. And last year, as the market started to come back, we saw that our customers were really happy with us. So as they built volume, they were building volume on Sidecar. And they were telling all of their friends about us, in a sense. So we grew 3x last year as compared to the year prior. And we're set to multiply our growth this year as well. And I think we've done a good job of weathering the storm by being really focused on a single type of product experience rather than trying to just like service every customer in the universe. And by being focused, we've made a certain group very happy that we believe is a growing audience, right, over time. Now, that's not to say that the market is fully recovered. I think we're still in a recovery period. But we have weathered the storm by not trying to take a bunch of bets in different areas where we needed all of them to work, but we've placed a very big bet on a segment that we have high conviction in that has come around and is now more active because they're perhaps having a more difficult time raising a fund to invest across multiple companies, like an Andreessen style fund. And as a result, they're continuing to build their track record using SPVs, which is our core product.
And looking ahead, I guess you mentioned this in one of your podcasts. You mentioned the potential like expansion to other asset classes and possibly developing other investment products. So could you maybe share what you have in mind and how your existing clients and maybe new clients can benefit from your expansion to new investment products?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you look at the sort of world of opportunity for Sidecar, it really starts with emerging venture capitalists that are creating an SPV to invest in a seed stage company, which is like this tiny slice of the overall private market. But it's still an attractive slice because it's one that will receive a software-driven experience and be happy with it for running their business. But if we look at these additional slices of the private market, which include things like real estate and other asset classes, all of these assets are, you know, largely held through similar structures that as what Sidecar creates today. So for us, it's not a grave deviation to consider opening Sidecar up to this world of additional private market assets. However, what's important for us to consider is, again, staying focused, right? So we focus on a certain segment in venture. Can we replicate that for a certain segment in real estate, a certain segment in maybe private equity, like search funds or whatever it may be? And that's the work we're doing today to discover, like, where do we want to go next? I'm confident that there's utility for Sidecar in the broader private market. I'm confident, actually, that in 20 years, whenever someone's investing in the private market, Sidecar will be a part of the value chain. I think the question for us is, how do we navigate to that, like, sort of larger market impact? And those are questions we're answering this year.
And speaking about the larger markets, Sidecar facilitates venture capital deals not just domestically but also globally, from my perspective, right? So how does the platform support entrepreneurs, investors with, I guess, this international ambitions, right? So, and what unique challenges do you see in this global venture landscape?
Yeah, so we support investments globally and investors globally. However, we don't change how we operate for an internet, ex-US audience versus a US audience. And that is because, you know, we have created software that creates a Delaware entity for supporting your investment into the underlying asset. We support investments in US dollars. Now, a lot of global trade happens in US dollars, and Delaware entities are a gold standard. So it's not a hindrance to a global audience using Sidecar. Some of the challenges, however, that we have seen are around foreign exchange sort of issues. Like, let's say the company needs to receive an investment in British pounds, sterling, or perhaps, Turkish lira, which actually hasn't happened. But like, let's say, you know, there is a need for that, right? In that situation, we'd have to deal with a Forex conversion event. These are like nuanced, sort of like, you know, at the edge of our world type issues, but we have experienced some of that.
So at this point, Sidecar has raised like $8 million in its seed stage, I guess, right? And you have a team around like 20 members located in California, New York, and Latin America. Is that correct?
We've actually raised a bit more than 16, and we now have a bit more than 40 people.
I'm sorry. Okay.
We grew quickly last year. We're now, this is maybe interesting for some folks who are building, you know, we started as a fully remote company. We're now a hybrid organization. I get a lot of benefit from working with people. I think a lot of our team likes to get together. So we have physical offices now in Houston, where I'm based, San Francisco for our product design and engineering team, Seattle for our customer support, customer success team, New York for our sales and marketing team. And then we have a few engineers, as you know, in Central and South America.
Yeah. But initially, Sidecar started as a remote first company, right? So your initial engineering team, a significant part of it, as far as I know, like it was based in Latin America outside of the US, right? So can you share more about the impact that this initial strategy had on Sidecar's growth and overall team dynamics?
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say it's an initial strategy. I think it's a continuing strategy. For engineering specifically, I think this engineering is a unique organization in that there is quite a bit of structure and it's pretty clear what someone should be working on and what done looks like usually. And engineers typically work very well remotely, like just like from our personal experience building an engineering organization. So for us, it's a continuing strategy of having a global engineering team. Number one, of course, there's a cost benefit of hiring engineers for if you're a US-based company outside the US. I think a second is you can find engineering talent in countries that are in time zones that are adjacent to the US, right? So like there's just, for us, it's a no-brainer to find great talent wherever talent exists for the engineering organization. Although leadership as a company is centralized in the US in certain cities.
And what strategy have you implemented at Sidecar to build this really cool remote and global first culture inside the company?
In the early days, like when we were like sub 10 people, it's a very passion-driven sort of culture, right? It's like, okay, we're going to go up against this multi-billion dollar company and slice away at what they can do because we are more nimble. We care more about our customers. We found this pocket that they're missing of opportunity, right? Let's go and get it. Let's fight every day. We get up and we're just aligned. We're all in Slack. Everyone knows exactly what they should be doing. And we're all doing multiple things. I think past 10 people, when you get to like 20 people, you need to be very intentional about sharing why what you're doing is important at a regular cadence and come up with some really strong core values. Now that we're 40, core values are like an instrumental part of like who we are and that identity. Right. And it keeps us nimble, keeps us agile. And ultimately, the goal is to empower people to get their best work done wherever they are. Like, it's not to tell people what to do. Like, no one wants to work at a startup because they want instructions and they want hierarchy and bureaucracy. They want to work at a startup because they want to feel empowered to go solve their own problems and push the boundaries for themselves personally and for the company. Right. So we now index around core values a lot to empower our team. And that comes into how we hire also. Like, and that applies to engineers globally as well. When we recruit anyone for Sidecar, we're looking to see, like, is this person going to present a growth mindset, ownership, camaraderie? Will they care about our, who we're building for deeply in the same way that I do? In some way, maybe not exactly as much as I would care about a customer experience, right, via an email or something, but will they care about the end goal of growing this business? And I think that allows us to empower everybody to just go fight their own battles every day.
And from your experience, what advice would you give to companies wanting to grow their business internationally and start hiring globally?
Work with great partners, right? Like yourself. I mean, I think that's instrumental because what you don't want to do is take the risk of recruiting in an area where you're not familiar, where you don't know the local rules and laws, where you don't know how to validate talent, and where you might end up in a situation where someone doesn't work out and you don't have an explanation for why, like why they may have dropped off. So I think it's very important to go through the right types of partnerships. I think it makes a lot of sense to not try to recruit directly outside the US to start if you're a US-based founder, but instead to go through an agency that will employ someone directly and then contract with you so that you're following all the right protocol and laws and someone else is accountable to make sure that they're recruiting the best talent. And you're fully aligned in what that looks like as you grow your business.
And frankly speaking, it's been rewarding for us, for Globee, to collaborate with teams like Sidecar. You touched this a bit, but maybe how can other companies find a partner for their global expansion? Any advice specifically about that?
So this goes to how perhaps we even met, right? Ask other founders, like ask people who are in the business who have done this successfully for their personal experience and why they did certain things. I think nothing can beat that firsthand sort of, you know, just, hey, inform me on the mistakes you made so I don't make those same mistakes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. Nick, I would like to conclude our conversation with another point that I caught that caught my attention in one of your interviews, in one of your podcasts. You mentioned this belief that anyone can be a venture capitalist. So what practical steps can individuals from outside maybe the US take to enter the VC space and start investing in startups?
Yeah, look, I think anyone can be a venture capitalist. Should everyone be a venture capitalist? Probably not. It's not a very lucrative business. It's a very passion-based business in the early days. But I think the steps to take, like the first is one, like, do you believe that investing in startup companies is like the way that you can channel your energy towards some positive change in the world, right? I think you need to feel that viscerally. Like, my impact can be had by backing someone who I believe is working on something so instrumental to what, you know, to what humanity needs in the future. Because it's really that type of bet, right, that makes sense in VC. It's like that one bet you will make that will return 100x, right? That's how you should think about it. But if you feel that passion, if you think like being close to founders is where you want to spend your time and backing founders is like your way of driving your impact, then I think the way to start the business is to meet as many founders as possible, to meet as many other VCs as possible, and to learn the patterns that people look for when they meet a founder. Learn the founder journey and the challenges inherent in building a scalable business, because it's not intuitive. It's not just as simple as start up, like incorporate an entity, hire people, raise money, win, right? There's a lot of pain and suffering along this journey that I think you need to be able to empathize with to understand the traits you want to find in a founder, right? How committed are they to this vision? Have they built something in the past? Have they been through really difficult situations where like the world felt like it was falling apart around them, but they still persevered? You want to be able to viscerally feel that and understand that. And then also be there for that person, because another benefit of being a VC is you're in the trenches with your founders. You want to be as supportive as you can be. You want to understand how to empathize with them. So I think just again, meeting as many people, talking to as many people before you even write your first check. And eventually, as you've sort of built your pattern recognition, figure out why you want to invest in certain categories. Is it the life sciences? Is it consumer technology? Is it energy transition? Whatever it may be. And why? Maybe it's because you have a personal interest there. You find yourself reading periodicals about decarbonization or whatever it may be. Okay, if that's your path, if it's decarbonization, go really deep. What is the latest technology? Who's working in the field? Who's maybe branching out and developing IP? And go meet those people and then do your diligence. What's the market size? Who are the potential customers, right? This is like, it's a long path, but you'll find yourself having conversations then with a slice of founders in the market you're talking to. And then when you feel like you found the right opportunity, you have to really show up and be like, I'm going to help you, right? Take my $25,000, whatever it is, whatever the total amount of money you can raise is, maybe a small amount to start, take that and be like, this is the best money you will ever receive because I'm going to be in this with you. And start to build your track record that way. I would say that's probably the best way to do it.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Thanks a lot for your insights on the VC space, investments, and global expansion and hiring. Thank you for your time.
Of course, Viv. Thanks for having me.